NPR.
Ah, yeah, March Madness is happening. And that is why we're talking college basketball today on The Indicator. To kick us off, we got Andrea Hsu from NPR's business desk here. What's up, Andrea?
Hey, I don't want to disappoint, but I'm not going to be talking about Caitlin Clark or about UConn's chances this year. I am a labor reporter after all.
Come on, everybody is talking about Caitlin Clark right now.
I know, but the most interesting team to me at the moment is one that hasn't made it to March Madness since 1959. But they did recently celebrate this sweet victory.
And Dartmouth ends the season with a win.
Dartmouth. Okay.
Yeah, in New Hampshire. And that same day, the team also had this other huge win.
In a 13-2 landslide vote, the Dartmouth men's basketball team became the first team in college athletics to unionize.
Okay, I see why you've been watching this now. I love the labor reporter nerdiness.
Yeah, you're with me. Well, two of the Dartmouth players, Romeo Myrtle and Cade Haskins, talked to reporters just after their vote.
We want everyone to have their own voice.
Just having our voices heard and actually getting a seat at the table really means a lot to us.
Giving college athletes a voice is a hot topic right now, especially with all the money sloshing around college sports. There's growing support for the idea that these athletes should be paid something.
But then again, Dartmouth finished up the season dead last in the Ivy League. Let's just say they're not the ones bringing in the big bucks.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Adrian Ma.
And I'm Andrea Hsu. Today on the show, why unionizing college sports is such a polarizing topic.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Fisher Investments. SVP Judy Abrams shares how their fiduciary duty comes to life while helping clients plan for retirement.
As a fiduciary, we must make decisions in our clients' best interest. So we work with them in consultation to be on a glide path so when they want the option to retire, that portfolio is still going to keep working for them at this stage of life.
Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss.
Support for NPR comes from ADP. Don't know if you've heard, but the latest workplace trend is currently sneaking up on your business. What is it? Could be anything. The great cubicle comeback, maybe a global bagel shortage. Dealing with anything is what ADP does best, something they've been doing for over 70 years. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions so businesses are ready for the next anything. ADP, always designing for people.
Here on The Indicator, we've talked about how college sports are changing. Thanks to a Supreme Court ruling a couple years ago, college athletes are starting to earn money from their name, image, and likeness. And now there's still a lot to be worked out with that, but that is not what we're going into today. We are going to wrestle with a separate but related issue, one that was central to this union campaign kicked off at Dartmouth.
And it boils down to this. Are college athletes merely students playing sports as part of their college experience, or are they employees of the schools they play for? Now, Biden appointee to the National Labor Relations Board issued a memo about this in 2021. She said, if the students are performing a service in exchange for compensation, like scholarship or a stipend, while under the control of their school, they should be classified as employees and given the right to unionize and bargain for wages and benefits.
But the Dartmouth case didn't seem so clear-cut at first. For one thing, being an Ivy League school, Dartmouth does not give athletic scholarships. Athletes might get financial aid and also things like shoes, meals, game tickets, but they're not getting free tuition in exchange for playing a sport.
Yeah, in fact, Cade and Romeo both work campus jobs to cover some of their expenses.
So I work at the snack bar. It's in the dorm.
I work the front desk at the gym.
These guys, Cade and Romeo, argue that playing basketball for Dartmouth is also like a job. They spend a lot of time every day at practice, lifting weights, watching game film. And then, of course, there are the games. Cade Haskins told reporters these hours really add up.
I would say close to like 25 to 30 without travel, you know, it can be a lot.
And when they travel, they have to follow a team schedule that dictates when they eat, when they sleep. During registration, they're told to try and avoid certain class times that would conflict with practice. And as for schoolwork,
I got to get a lot of work done on the buses, which... Yeah. The Wi-Fi cuts out a lot. That can be frustrating.
This level of control that the school has over the players was a big part of what led our regional director of the National Labor Relations Board to rule that, yeah, these athletes are employees of Dartmouth. Her ruling is what paved the way for their union election.
Now, needless to say, since this happened, Cade's phone has been blown up with athletes from all over reaching out.
So I think this is just the start. I think this is going to domino effect other cases across the country.
But Dartmouth has said, whoa, not so fast. The school has appealed that regional director's ruling that allowed the election to go forward. I reached out to the school for a comment, and they sent back a statement that said, classifying these students as employees simply because they play basketball is as unprecedented as it is inaccurate.
So what we are seeing is the beginning of what's likely to be a long legal battle, one that could end up at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, this could take months, if not years, to resolve.
In the meantime, though, Congress wants to get involved here.
The joint hearing on the Subcommittee on Health, Employment...
House Republicans called a hearing the other week to consider this question. Are college athletes just student athletes, or are they workers who have rights to unionize?
Among their witnesses was Tyler Sims. He's this attorney who played ice hockey in college before turning pro.
It's not that unions are good or bad. It's the setting here that's the problem.
He talked about this educational piece to college sports. He says it's where you learn the value of hard work, how to take criticism, how to perform under pressure. And he warned there could be all kinds of complications if college athletes are allowed to unionize. Like, would their scholarships be taxed? Could players be cut for bad performance? Also, what would a strike look like in college sports, especially for those players who are on athletic scholarships?
An employer is not required to pay employees on strike. Could I still go to class? Would I have to pay out of pocket for my tuition? How would that affect both my academic and athletic career?
At the same hearing, we also heard from Jill Bodensteiner. She's athletic director at St. Joseph's in Philadelphia and said none of the 21 sports at her school make a profit. Actually, that's true for most schools. And so she said paying wages would be a problem.
You know, I think decision number one would be, okay, if there are wages now involved, what does that do to the financial aid? I think that's where the money would have to come from.
I talked with Michael Hsu about this. He's co-founder of the College Basketball Players Association. He's also a former regent at the University of Minnesota. He doesn't buy these arguments. He points out colleges at all levels already spend a lot of money on sports.
You know, I've approved a lot of coaches' contracts. You know, I fought against some of the coaches' contracts.
Fought, he says, because these contracts were so much money. Michael argues that college athletes are bringing in tuition for schools, so paying them at least minimum wage is not only doable, he says it's a requirement of the National Labor Relations Act.
Now, even Michael doesn't think all college athletes would qualify as employees. After all, some schools run their athletic teams more like club sports. But athletes who have to abide by special rules and schedules likely would qualify, he thinks. And he set out to test this a couple years ago. He filed an unfair labor practice charge against the NCAA for misclassifying college athletes, calling them, quote, student athletes. Now, he's still waiting for federal labor officials to take action, but in the meantime, he's filed more of these charges.
I have always believed that there was an issue. I never really understood why no one tackled it.
Especially given the history behind the term student athlete. Now, the NCAA first used this in the 1950s as a way to say these college kids playing sports, they're not working for the schools, and so they can't claim benefits like workers' comp. Now, this argument was used in a case of a college football player who died after suffering a head injury during a game, and his widow was denied benefits.
Yeah, I also heard about this history from former NFL linebacker Brandon Copeland.
This term was coined as a way to get out of fairly treating a human being.
Brandon recently co-founded a group called athletes.org to try to remedy that. It's not a union, but it has some of the same goals, including helping college athletes earn money, at least those who are in revenue-generating sports.
If you are helping people make money, you should get paid for it, period.
But Brandon feels less certain about athletes who aren't making money for their schools. He thinks back to his own college days.
You know, me as a Penn Ivy League football player, I wasn't generating revenue for the University of Pennsylvania, and unionization may not have been the smartest thing for me.
Then again, he said he didn't know anything about unions back then, and times have changed. He actually says he loves that the basketball players at Dartmouth did what they felt was right for them.
I think it's beautiful to see when you can get young people to come together and band together against something that's bigger than them.
A poll from the Associated Press and the University of Chicago found just over half of adults are against college athletes unionizing. And those against it tended to be older, white, and Republican. This episode was produced by Corey Bridges and Olivia Richardson, with engineering by Patrick Murray. It was fact-checked by Sierra Juarez. Our editor is Kate Kincannon, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
If you've never donated to the NPR network before, that's okay. Public radio is available to everyone for free. But we do rely on listener support from those who are able to give. So join the community of supporters for Public Media Giving Days, coming up on May 1st and 2nd. Please give at donate.npr.org, and thank you.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.